Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Hey everybody, this is Alice Albee here for you again this week as Dave was called to jury duty. Can you believe it? He is doing his civic duty. You know, we had Joe Farr called in for jury duty a couple of weeks ago also. I'm getting a little concerned. I hope I'm not next. Knock on wood, and Andy too. So today we do have for our show, got myself, we also have Andy Schell, the Profit Doctor, bringing us great information. And then since it is a holiday, happy Columbus Day, everyone, October 14th, the markets are closed. So Joe Farr, of course, has the day off and is out, I think, at an industry golf outing today. So it is Andy and I holding the fort down today, which means you're going to get a lot of meat on the bones about operations and about accounting and what we're hearing from our clients today. We plan today to talk to you about what is going on in the market with QM. We're also going to talk about a compliance health check product that Indicom Mortgage U is offering for everyone today, these days, and we're finding a lot of interest in it. Andy's going to be talking a little bit, like I mentioned, about things that his clients are running into on a day-to-day basis. So definitely covering the hot topics for you today. And I'm also going to be watching for Paul Mallow. We're expecting Paul to dial in. And also, we'll be looking for Tony Garitano out there and see if they can take a break today to also give you an update. Without any further ado, I'm going to move right into Joe Farr's piece. So we've got Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, provided lots of detail. The markets are closed today for Columbus Day, and of course we all know the government remains shut down and the talks are continuing. The Dow was down 60 points at the time that he wrote this, as no solution was reached over the weekend. So last week, MBS prices ended a little lower. They were down 10/32nds. The week was dominated by the government shutdown and the debt limit discussions, you know, of course, which those are constantly back and forth. And there was little economic news to react to it. So the MBS prices showed much more restraint to the political headlines than the stock market. There was some intraday volatility for MBS prices, but the day-to-day changes were quite small. The stock market, on the other hand, had the large swings based on perceived progress in Congress, which, you know, didn't really get much progress, right? We're still waiting. So the government shutdown meant retail sales and PPI could not be released. What was released last week were the minutes from the 9/18 Fed meeting. This was the meeting at which the Fed surprised the market by not tapering, remembering that, even though the vote was 9-1 to taper. So the minutes revealed a large disagreement among Fed members about the discussion. The possibility of a government shutdown was one of the considerations. So the decision not to taper may have been a good one. When we get Joe back on the show next week, I definitely want to pick his brain a little bit more about his thoughts about the minutes from that Fed meeting. So the Treasury auctions last week were mixed. Short-term Treasuries did not go well. Long-term Treasuries received a surprisingly strong bid. So if we try and look ahead, it looks like this week will be kind of more of the same. Once a solution is reached with the government shutdown, we may see a nice reaction in the market. But since MBS prices have not moved much during the gridlock, Joe's not looking for any kind of big reaction to prices this week. The size of the reaction will really depend on how far the Congress kicks the can down the road, so to speak, right? That'll really impact the decision or the reaction in the markets. We should see a couple economic announcements, though, this week anyway. Tomorrow, the New York Empire State Index comes out. Wednesday, the Fed Beige Book. Thursday, the Philly Fed. So what won't be released is the CPI, industrial production, or housing starts. So that's the information from Joe Farr that he left with us for this week. And everyone stay tuned next week when we have Joe Farr back live to give us an update on how his golf game went. No, I mean on how the markets went. So thanks all. That is the update on the markets for today.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS QuoteLine delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur.
Get MBS prices as trades happen.
Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock-float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect and know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS QuoteLine, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS QuoteLine today at MBSQuoteLine.com.
MBSQuoteLine.com.
646-716-4972. The Lickin' on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back. This is Alice Alvey, and I am here to bring you my legislative update. Now, with Congress out of commission right now in the mortgage world, I'm actually happy, right? So I like that I don't have any big new news to report at this moment, other than you do need to pay attention to that HUD has put out their proposed rule for their qualified mortgage definition. The comments on this are due October 30th, so you've got a little bit of time to try and digest this. Now, a lot of the press was saying there's no difference, it's all the same, and if you kind of go through the main categories, that's a correct statement with one exception. HUD is looking at having a different safe harbor calculation. So HUD is looking at, and they're asking, okay, remember that in the proposed rule stage, this is, they're floating an idea, we need to respond. And so the details of it actually are on page 59896 of the Federal Register. I was talking about this with a coworker of mine, and they were reading the summary part of it, and there's really a lot of detail in the meat of this proposal that gets into talking about kind of a floating threshold for HUD, that they want to work with a combination of what is the annual mortgage insurance premium and then add 1.15%, so that if HUD has to change their MIP, you know, based on their financial conditions, that the tolerance above the APOR for the threshold is also floating. So FHA is looking for feedback on this concept. We're still working with the numbers, talking to our clients, so I'm not going to give you an opinion one way or the other for me, but and from yet. We'll talk more about that next week. But I do want you to take a look at this for your numbers and what makes sense in your markets. I was really surprised at how many companies didn't even know that this might be a, there might be a difference for FHA. Software companies are going, really? Like, we need something else to program. So, yes, there's going to be something else to program. So it does look like HUD is not going to go with a straight, you know, working with our 1.5%, right? Right now the threshold is, do you trigger a high-priced mortgage loan, in a sense, or a high-cost mortgage at 1.5% above the APOR? Now, there's a different calculation for all of this within the QM, and FHA now looking at using a different tolerance amount besides just the 1.5, that they would be using a 1.15 plus the annual mortgage insurance premium, the combined annual mortgage insurance premium. So we'll have to dig deeper into this, and we'll be talking more about it with you next week. In the meantime, check it out for yourself. It was published September 30th, so that gave us 30 days, and we need to make sure we're responding by October 30th. If you have any questions, don't hesitate to give us a call over here at Indicom Mortgage U, and that's the legislative update for today, folks.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals
providing classroom and web-based delivery
and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here's David Lickin.
Welcome back, everyone. Hey, Paul Mallow, I just saw your line up on the dashboard. I wonder if you're out there and if you're available. I think I see
yeah,
out there.
I'm here,
so, Paul, welcome to the program. Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I thought maybe you forgot it. We're on duty. We're on duty here at Inside Mortgage Finance. I know some of the other trade press are taking the day off to play golf or whatever, but not me.
All right. So what do you have for us today?
Well, you know, we crunch the loan level data from the GSEs all the time. John Bancroft of our staff does that. And some interesting things are going on in the channels, the origination channels. It looks like, even though, you know, volumes dropped in the third quarter, it looks like the market share for correspondent lenders is picking up. And we're pretty much surmising that, you know, there's a lot of small to medium-sized correspondent lenders out there who are pretty good in purchase money lending. And that's probably the reason for the pickup, that these guys are doing purchase money loans and then selling them to who else but, you know, the big boys who in turn flip them to Fannie and Freddie. So, you know, and there was one of the reports on IMFnews.com today. There's a company called Embrace, which is entering the correspondent channel. You know, we've been hearing a lot of reports over the last couple months about lenders moving into correspondent, the correspondent space, and, you know, that's a real trend. It looks like loan brokers, their market share is still stuck in the 10% range, and, you know, it's going nowhere either way, probably. You know, brokers tend to, the belief is that brokers tend to be, you know, refi specialists, but that's not necessarily as true as it used to be. It'll be interesting in the quarters ahead and to next year to see how much pain the mega banks are going to suffer in the retail channel, because, you know, they're very cost sensitive. They have Wall Street to please. They, you know, they don't like carrying all that retail overhead. There's also a story on www.imfnews.com today about, you know, the tally on the mortgage banks, the mega banks laying off their mortgage workers. A lot of the layoffs so far have been in the processing and the underwriting fields. They claim to us, at least, that very few loan officers have been let go. At least that's what Wells tells us, as well as B of A and Citi. So, you know, their standard line is, oh, we're not letting any loan officers go.
I heard the same thing from Chase, right.
Yeah, and, you know, we know Chase, they put out their Friday numbers as well as Wells did, and, you know, Chase had a little thing buried in one of their supplemental reports. By the time 2013 ends, we're going to lay off 11,000 mortgage and community bank workers, but, you know, some of that, they've already laid them off, so it's not like there's 11,000 layoffs coming. They've already laid off several thousand. But, you know, there's a lot of interesting stuff going out there. There's we quoted some mortgage servicing brokers about how busy they are. Some guys are saying they haven't been this busy in 25, 26 years, at least in MSR sales. The one thing about the government shutdown, it has not thrown any kind of monkey wrench into servicing sales. You know, a lot of people getting really nervous about this shutdown, and of course the debt limit ceiling. You know, what's going to happen later in the week? I know you mentioned it early on in your report. You know, there's a lot of nervous people out there in the mortgage industry. I mean, you know, God forbid that if we miss a debt payment, or even if you pay the debt and miss Social Security payments, you know, the market is just going to sell off, and you know.
Right.
It's going to be ugly. I mean, there's some predictions that, you know, rates could double. Mortgage rates, if they're at 4.5 now, we're looking at 9%. I mean, you know, no one's saying that's going to happen, but, you know, there's a lot of people, you know, making contingency plans and trying to figure out, you know, what's going to happen if there is a default. It's, you know, we're, you know, sort of the Wild West out there. And, you know, it's a very interesting time in the market right now, so. Anyway, so that's sort of the long and short of it. There's also a lot of speculation when the Federal Housing Finance Agency is going to come out with their announcement on loan level caps. You know, everyone believes they're going to lower it, but no one knows if they're going to lower it for the first or the second quarter. There's a lot of talk that they're going to punt on the issue and maybe make an announcement later on. You know, so everything's in flux in this town, so it's just a wild and crazy time.
It is. It's, you feel like you have to do, should you just try and coast, right? So, and just, and it's almost like, well, let me focus on implementing my regulations then, because everything else is, I have to just, it's so much of a wait and see right now in terms of loan amounts. And then, as you said, trying to get the government back up and running. So is there more we should be watching for? I mean, is that a realistic concept that you think rates could double?
Well, I really hate to think what would happen to the markets, not just our market, but worldwide markets, if they actually physically default on a bond payment. I mean, it sounds, you know, there's all this talk in the years, there's this book called Black Swan, stuff that comes totally out of left field that screws up the markets.
Right.
I mean, you know, it's, the sentiment is so ugly in Washington now. You know, the Republicans and Democrats are like cats and dogs. The White House doesn't want to negotiate, and Tea Party hates Obama and back and forth and blah, blah, blah. You know, we're all sick of hearing it on the news every night. And it seems far-fetched that the government would actually miss a payment. But can you imagine if they did? I mean, it would just, you know, you'd have a 50% sell-off in the stock market, I believe.
Exactly.
I mean, it's just, you know, these guys are playing with, you know, dynamite, and they don't realize it. At least, you know, unless this is the biggest poker game in the world going, and there's some deal out there ready to be signed, sealed, and delivered. I mean, you know, it's just, I get exasperated reading it and talking to people about it. But, you know, let's just say they get a deal by Thursday, okay? What about the money that's been taken out of the economy because of the shutdown? I mean,
right.
You know, people, you know, private sector people who are getting damaged, they're not getting their back pay. The government workers will get their back pay. But, you know, those people who run, you know, tour guide operators near the national parks, it's not like the government's going to hand them a check for the 2 or 3 weeks of business that just evaporated. And they have, those people have mortgage payments, home equity payments, not to mention other personal, you know, payments like child care and utility bills. You know, it's gonna wash through eventually, and there's gonna be some pain out there.
There will, so yeah. Well, and each side is blaming the other side or hoping to blame the other side. So while we sit and wait. Well, thanks so much for your report, Paul. We look forward to hopefully next week we have a working government. That's what we're all gonna be pushing for,
so.
Right? Yeah, knock on wood. So, well, thanks so much. So, Inside
Thank
Mortgage
you.
Finance, what's the link again? You want to give everybody
www.imfnews.com. We go out daily on the web, and our weekly is Inside Mortgage Finance and Inside MBS and ABS and other assorted publications. So, but those are the flagships.
And also the data, right? Don't everybody forget out there.
Oh, yeah, people love our
industry.
Data. We sell lots of
yeah.
data. Yeah.
It's awesome for marketing. You use it for all kinds of things within your operations and sales. So great stuff. Thanks so much, Paul. I'm glad you hung in there for us through this segment, and we look forward
great.
To talking with you again next week.
Thank you. Have a good one.
All right, thanks, Paul. Thanks, you too. Bye-bye.
In today's climate, quality counts more than ever, and Wetzel's can help your company maintain the quality that you require to survive in an ever-changing market. With over 450 customers across the country, Wetzel's has specialized in quality control reviews for residential lenders since 1985. Wetzel's can assist your organization in maintaining a high standard of quality within your residential mortgage operation. They offer a wide variety of services, including loan quality control, servicing quality control, quality control plans, fraud review services, and even web-based quality control software. Quality is never an accident. It is always the result of high intention, sincere effort, intelligent direction, and skillful execution. Choosing Wetzel's represents the wise choice of many alternatives. Contact Wetzel's today for details at 248-592-2252. Wetzel's, the single source solution for your quality control needs. And now, broadcasting live from Austin, Texas, we're back with the Lincoln on Lending Show.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Alice Alvey here, filling in for Dave, who is on jury duty today. Next up on the broadcast, we have Andy Schell, the Profit Doctor. Andy, how are you today?
Alice, I am doing really, really well. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. I've, you know, bouncing around here on this switchboard. I sure miss Dave today because he certainly does a much better job.
That is so not the case. Dave has a unique personality, and you are doing great as well.
You're pushing
all the buttons perfectly. Everything's flowing very well. Good job, Alice.
Hey, thank you. All right. Well, Andy, tell us what's the news today from the Prophet Doctor's office.
A couple of things that we're seeing as trends is there's really two things that we're seeing recently. One is the continued lack of concern over third party management, over the managing the relationships we have with third parties to comply with the CFP bulletin 2012-03. We're just not seeing people get too excited about it. We'll get there, but it's just a very dangerous place to be, and what's going to end up probably happening is just like Paul was talking about the government shutdown and the fat tail consequence, the black swan event of when we actually would default on a bond payment, which is so astronomically uncalculable to me that we would even get there, much less have to deal with the result from it, is that bad things happen and people react when bad things do. And so what I hope we can be is, like you and I always talk about, Alice's process matters and be proactive in addressing issues, is that people will deal with the CFPB, third-party management, vendor relationship issues now and be proactive about it rather than we wait until we see a big fine. Oh, wait. You know what? We already have that. American Express already got fined $83 million because they didn't comply with CFPB 2012-03. So I just keep encouraging people to do something about it. But the main thing, the other thing, Alice, I wanted to talk about and get your thoughts on this as well, is a topic that we're going to be talking about actually at the Accounting and Financial Management MBA seminar in Boca Raton, Florida, coming up at the end of November, and that is about technology ROI. So I wanted to give just a snippet about technology ROI and how we see people addressing it and the contrast between banks and mortgage banks. Because if you think about technology ROI, it's like people want the next new whiz-bang thing that makes everybody think their business is better. And so they talk to the technology sales people, and the presumption is that you walk in, turn the light switch on, the next system is up and running, fully functional. Everybody knows how to use it. All the data got migrated, and everything works perfectly on the first day.
And my staff and all loved it.
Exactly. And, of course, that never happens. And so the technology ROI is really about having a comprehensive understanding of the reality of technology assessment, technology deployment, the costs associated with technology deployment, and a realistic timeline of gaining technology efficiencies through staff buy-in, adoption, and proficiency. And so we're going to be talking over the next several weeks about some of the elements of technology ROI. But just to give you an idea, just to give you a little bit of a taste about some of the aspects that we're going to be talking about, they include things like, just to get started, when we talk about an ROI, when we talk about ROI, for example, in holding mortgage-backed securities, one of the risks that mortgage-backed security holders have when they buy an MBS and that's factored into the price is extension risk, because prepayment speeds are estimated based on interest rate environment, and a rapid change in interest rate environment, like a rapid increase in rates, would cause MBS prepayment speeds to slow, which means the life of the MBS extends, which is then called extension risk. Well, the same thing applies to technology deployment, because we have extension risk because what if it takes longer to fully deploy the technology than we expected? And so we have a cost factor that comes into play from extension risk. And there's a bunch of other ones, and I'm just going to touch on them very, very briefly, and then we'll talk more about them as time goes on. But there's extension risk, there's cost risk, there's efficiency risk, because that's where we talk about some of the systems don't do what we thought they were going to do. We have maintenance risk, capital expenditure risk, where it costs more than we think it does. We've got regulatory risk, things change that we didn't expect, and we've got technical innovation risk. you know, you remember back when Sullen and then Larry and Yvonne launched Optima Blue. Well, mm-hmm. if all of a sudden you had a front-end system that you thought had a good pricer engine in it, like, I can actually think of some, but I probably shouldn't say, because they sell themselves as having pricing engines. And then all of a sudden, you know, Optima Blue comes on the scene and everybody goes, oh, my gosh, there's this new product. And you just bought a system that you thought was going to work. Somebody comes out with a new whiz-bang technology that is better, faster, quicker. And you got to have that one now. So now all of a sudden your technology ROI is out the door because you got to go buy something new, something different, and replace and upgrade. So the timeline of technology deployment, the utilization of technology, the calculating the efficiency, calculating the benefit, turning the technology cost into an ROI calculation through additional pace, additional marketing resources, competitive advantages, all these things have to be factored into it. So we're going to be talking about this and more as it relates to technology ROI as the weeks progress. So that's the main thing on my list.
I don't know if you picked up on it, how smart you're brilliant in this, in the multiple uses of that acronym. So you talked a lot about ROI, as we all know, you know, my return on investment, but you talked also about the reality of the impact and the reality of the implementation. So there's a couple of ROIs that go with trying to get the ROI that you planned on, right?
Very good, Alice. Yes, absolutely. Good job.
All right, so... No, you said it. I just kind of heard it going on in the background there. So the reality of the impact and the reality of the implementation to get the return on investment. There's the ROI discussion coming up in the future weeks. I like that, Andy, because I think a lot of companies today are looking at, am I going to even be able to spend any money on technology? And if I do, you know, if I've got everybody at my shop screaming at me that we can't function, we're inefficient, and in today's world we have to be efficient, everybody needs to get to the bottom of all those numbers. And I like that you've included the operational impact, because I don't think a lot of folks do that. I think they get sold that this is easy to implement and your people will love it. And I'm not sure they factor in that. So
Exactly, Alice. Anytime a technology salesperson says it's easy to implement and everybody will love it, you should run, because they're not being honest. It's never easy, and there's always a buy-in timeline. And one interesting contrast when you were talking about the sales team says, we got to have this new thing or we're not going to get any business. That's one of the differences between mortgage banks and commercial banks. Commercial banks are much less driven by the screaming sales force. Mortgage banks tend to... you know, jump higher, run faster. If the sales team says we need it, they get it, period. Irrespective of the consequence from a financial perspective, whereas the commercial banks tend to be much more methodical about not listening to the racket, the noise, my branch is going to leave unless you get this new system.
Right.
More commercial bankers are much, much more disciplined at dealing with ROI than mortgage banks are typically, and we need to get the mortgage banking management mentality more in line with a focus on the ROI reality rather than always being driven by volume. I mean, you got to have volume to be successful, but you also have to have cost management to be successful. So there's a combination of both.
Yes, and I think, you know, one of the things we've experienced going through a merger, and I'm sure you've seen it as other companies go through mergers, you know, there's always that list of little things or things you kind of say, well, those aren't deal breakers, but they're definitely things that we have to take a look at and make sure we implement. And all that happens, too, even if you just think of something as simple as putting in a new origination software system. There's that laundry list of little things, but they ultimately add up to time. And if you don't capture that full list and make sure you're assessing how much time is it going to take to solve all those little things, you'd be surprised how one or two simple fields or screens can completely slow down closings, completely mess up how some very basic day-to-day operations are working. So
you're right. You know, and I would love
company does.
Oh yes,
sorry,
absolutely. We help with we help with technology deployment in order for people to, hopefully if they'll bring us in early enough, we can catch it in time to make it so that the integration is as seamless as possible, but it's never simple. And the problem is sometimes people bring us in at the end, in which case it takes a lot longer, it's more expensive, and it's more painful because it's harder to fix it once it's already broken. It's better to have the transition go through more smoothly. And hopefully that's what happens when we get involved, because we bring up the whole change management mentality, the project orientation, the getting buy-in before you jump off the cliff, the getting the, you know, make sure you got a parachute on before you jump, and you know, it's just testing things. Make sure the parachute works. You know, there's just a reality of what it means to implement. There you go, ROI, reality of implementation.
Well, and I have worked with Teresa at your company, and she is brilliant from the tech side, and I would assume she's on these types of projects as well. And I know you guys have tremendous resources to be able to help folks on that technology analysis and assessment.
Yeah, you're right. She is. She is brilliant. She's been doing this for almost 30 years and just knows how to make system conversions run well and be as painless as possible. But when we walk in and the management says, the sales team told us that this was going to be implemented by last month, why isn't it done yet? And here they expect us to be the silver bullet to fix it. And it's just, we have to tell them, there's no silver bullet. It takes planning. It takes resource allocation. It takes commitment to the process. And it's going to take ultimately management backing the process to get the buy-in from the team. So you see these little waves of rebellion coming from different aspects of the organization, where one branch says, you know, we're not going to do it, or all the underwriters are screaming because they don't like the system and the information is not in the same place. And so to do it well, you've got to start by understanding what the expectations are. You've got to understand, what is it that the sales team really wants? What is it that the processors and underwriters and closers really, really want? What kind of data does accounting and finance, secondary marketing need out of the origination system or the mortgage system of record? What is it that everything, how does it all fit together? And oftentimes people don't ask those questions. So one of the reasons that we're able to help with this is both Teresa and I have extensive commercial bank mortgage lending background. And in the commercial bank environment, it's very structured, and the probability of failed implementations at commercial banks is substantially less than the probability of failed implementations at mortgage banks. And again, it's not magic. The reason that commercial banks deploy technology more effectively is because they apply a change management process. They apply a structure to it to make it so that the people understand what it is that they're getting. Management understands what it is that the staff wants. Everybody's involved in the process to have an understanding about what's coming next. Everybody has realistic understanding about what the timeline is going to be like and what their role in supporting the change is going to be, and you get their buy-in, the staff's buy-in, all the way down to the originator, obviously originator, processor, closer, underwriter, get buy-in from everybody that this is coming, this is the change, this is why we're doing it, this is what we're hoping to accomplish, this is the training you're going to go through, these are the things you're going to have to learn, this is how it's going to affect you. And by doing that, you then get people to buy in, and they start getting excited about it because they see what can be new. And then even on go-live day, it's still going to be whoopses and exceptions. And I can't
right.
tell you how many free lunches I've won because of bets that I've placed with mortgage company managers, where they'll say to me, oh, hey, we just bought the next new system. And I'll go, great, great. How's your deployment plan coming along? And they go, well, they're going to have it running in 2 months. And I said, I'll tell you what, I'll bet you dinner at pick the restaurant that you don't have it running in 4 months. And they go, oh, no, it's going to be done before the end of the year. And I said, I'll tell you what, I'll make it 6 months. I bet you don't have it running in 6 months. And they go, I'd love to have you buy me dinner. So I say, you're on. And I wish I would lose more. Because I wish that mortgage companies would take seriously the deployment requirements of a technology integration that account, the beginning with the assessment of what the user requirements are, what your people need, all the way through the process of getting the new system selected and then deployed. And you know, the reality of this too is that there are extensive regulations and pronouncements out of the FFIEC, which is the Examination Council for OCC and FDIC, and the CFPB is on this panel as well. And within that group, there's hundreds and hundreds of pages of documentation about technology integration, technology deployment. And mortgage companies will soon be, I'm going to predict, expected to comply with the decision justification process that commercial banks have to do today. And that's why we can do this well, because that's what we've been doing for all these years, is justifying the technology decision and ensuring as smooth a transition plan as possible, because you get tested, you get examined, you get asked, why did you pick that system? How did you justify spending the money on that? And you have to do that in a commercial bank, and you know, mortgage companies don't have to yet, but I expect that's coming.
Well, it's interesting that you bring up that angle, because we were talking about this internally at Indicom on vendor management as well, and the idea that, you know, along the same lines with Fannie and Freddie, it's not just do I meet the approval requirements, it's how can I defend that I deserve to be approved, right? It's a whole different viewpoint. You know, like you were just saying, it's why did I make this decision? How do I earn these statuses? And you have to have that entire process documented. I think the key is they need to get you in before they sign the contract with any kind of technology provider, right? I mean, it sounds like you guys end up coming in after they've already signed a contract, and now you're just trying to help them get over a hurdle they already made for themselves.
Well, ideally, they'll get us in before they sign the contract, and if they do, then we'll help them make sure the contract does comply with the requirements and the decision process does comply with the requirements, and that the implementation will be more effective. Now, I can also assure you that it will cost more, but the cost of not doing it right the first time is actually even more, and that's what people don't think about. They look at the cost to do it right, and they go, oh, my gosh, it's going to cost, you know, blah, 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 thousands. And if I just do it because the salesperson will say, no, you don't need that help, just sign up, because what's the salesperson want? They want the sale. And ultimately they want the sale because it hits their numbers, hits their commission. They're motivated for you to buy it, not necessarily deploy it themselves, because how often do the sales team actually support the deployment process? Not very
right.
often. Other people get yelled at because the sales team overpromised. And they don't always. There's a lot of very, very good salespeople out there. But there's also some folks that tend to kind of let people think it's going to be better than it is. So when you're talking to a sales team, a technology salesperson, be nice if Tony could weigh in on this, be sure and get it in writing, get the commitments in writing, get the timeline in writing, get the support resources in writing, how much are they going to help, how long are they going to be on staff, on site, who's going to be on site, what kind of 24-hour supports are going to be. Because we're currently working with clients who are not supported as well as they should be by the vendor, and there's a whole cottage industry forming around the implementation process where the vendors don't do it well, so other people are coming in and helping companies do it, when the reality is companies need to be able to understand the system fully themselves. Every company that installs a new mortgage origination system that's going to be their system of record needs to have somebody on site, on staff, somebody that works for the company who understands the systems from beginning to end and can make minor programming changes, can build screens, can fix the stuff. You just got to have someone like that on board. And if you don't, you need to get someone you can train to do it.
Yeah, and I think, too, the other thing we notice is on the training side, obviously, is, you know, if you look at LOSs in particular, they can only go so far, right? There is a point at which it has to be teach the job, and this is one of our mantras in our training, is the training has to be able to teach the job, and the LOS provider is only going to get you to, here's your system, we'll lay it out the way you want. And one of the things we've helped companies with, and we've talked about with a couple of providers as well, is we will make sure that we've got programs that take the handoff from that point. Because as you said, it takes someone internally, someone working with your internal staff to make sure, you know, that training is set up right too, and the implementation goes much more smoothly.
Well, and that's a great segue, Alice, because one of the things that I wanted to learn more about was how you guys do some of the things you do, how you do your health check list, your operations check point that your company does. And I don't know if we need to render commercial and come back to that, but I want to learn more about that.
Yeah, I do have one. Oh, thank you. All right. Yeah, we'll talk about that in our next segment. What I'm thinking, we'll go to we'll put in our quick break here. We also have Dave conducting an interview with Matt Robinson of the Mortgage Bankers Association. So we will go ahead and play that segment as well. There's some great information in that. So we will cover those two segments, and then Andy and I will be back picking up some things about QM that your loan originators need to know. I had a whole group of loan officers the other day. No one's talking to them about QM with their companies. What is up? You guys have left them completely out of the loop. They're all walking around either completely panicked or in a cloud. So we want to talk about that, and then we'll also talk about our health check product after this quick break and Dave's interview.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan,
if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact our Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
One of the purposes of this broadcast is to bring you information that is pertinent to what is going on in the industry and look for topics that will help our listeners operate more effectively in the communities they serve, doing what they love to do, or hopefully they love to do, and that is mortgage lending. One of the issues that we have that I want to address in this segment is I think overall we have a poor public image amongst the community in the communities we try to serve. For this reason, I've invited a guest to come on to talk about public relations, and his name is Matt Robinson, president and owner of Ascend Public Strategies. Matt, good to have you with us. Tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and your company.
David, I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me on. We are a PR and marketing firm, and, it's sort of like consulting. What does a consultant do? What is a PR and marketing firm? I know that's a question probably on a lot of people's minds. We work mainly with banks and mortgage companies to raise their profiles and increase brand awareness, ultimately to grow their businesses. We employ a variety of strategic marketing, communications, and public and community relations programs.
Matt, in order to help small lenders and mortgage banking companies across the country, you have to have a strong financial services and mortgage industry background. Tell our listeners a little bit about your background so they can get to know you a bit.
Yeah, I do. I worked at HUD for a number of years in the office of the secretary, promoting HUD's programs. And then I spent some time at FHA and also at Ginnie Mae. So I've got a solid mortgage and housing background. Then for the last few years, I've been working at the Mortgage Bankers Association in Washington, D.C., doing PR and marketing for them. So I've worked with all types of lenders, from small mortgage brokers to the big banks and Wall Street firms and everything in between. So I've got a solid housing, mortgage, PR, marketing background. I stay up to date on the legislation and the regulations coming out of the state capitals and out of Washington. So I stay abreast of news in the mortgage industry.
Matt, sounds like you got a strong background. Tell us a little bit about what type of marketing programs you run for your clients.
We look at overall brand positioning to make sure that clients' brand is consistent with their goals, the goals of the company. We could look at logos, colors, slogans, and all marketing materials to ensure that there's consistent messaging. The number one sales tool for a company is its website, and we do a lot of website enhancement and design. We establish and enhance social media platforms. Social media is the way of the future, and it's an easy, free way to communicate with any audience a company wants to communicate with. Consumers base a lot of their decisions on what their friends and neighbors are saying, so things like Yelp, if you're familiar with Yelp, is a really important tool. I've got a buddy who is in the hotel business, and he will do anything to prevent a negative Yelp review.
Tell us, Matt, what PR is and why it is so important.
But, you know, I think a good definition of PR is, you know, public relations, or how an entity communicates with its publics. Its publics can be defined as staff. Internal communications is key. Staff, customers, shareholders, directors, potential customers. You know, we draft and send press releases to get company news out to the public through the news media. We secure press coverage for our clients and their executives through news article participations and quotes, and we draft op-eds on timely issues. We've got relationships with media, and especially financial and mortgage media throughout the entire country, and those we leverage those relationships to get press coverage for our clients. That is one of the ways that we elevate the company's profile, and one of the ways that we, you know, establish them as a leader in the industry. You know, we analyze industry data and use the media to position executives as subject matter experts, so the public's reading these executives' names in the newspaper on a regular basis.
I hear you say that a company's website is the greatest sales tool they could have. What do you mean by that, and what is an example of something you often advise your clients about regarding their website enhancement?
Most customers today shop around for a bank or a mortgage company on the internet. The same can be said for a lot of other goods and services out there. Oftentimes, most times, it's first impression on a potential customer. We try to make it interactive. You know, videos and images can tell a story a lot better in a lot shorter time than asking a page viewer to read a paragraph of text. We try to make this thing as easy as possible for the potential customer. So if they're sitting in front of their computer looking at the screen, they don't have to put a ton of thought into it, and we're right there. We're telling them what they need in a succinct manner, and we're making it look like it's a professional job in 2013 instead of something that came at the beginning of the internet.
How do you make a website interactive? What do you mean by an interactive website?
One of the most popular tools that we use for a company's website is this feature where if a user is sitting on the website for, say, 30 or 60 seconds, it'll get a pop-up message saying, would you care to chat live with a member of our staff? That's huge because, as you know, personal touch is huge in sales. And so that's probably the most popular feature that we've come across in a long time.
Oh, really? That's interesting. So a pop-up feature, which I've thought is a distraction, you're saying is actually creates some interactiveness. And it also, those that are most interested will interact with that pop-up window to chat with staff immediately.
Yes, they're coming to your website because they're interested in a mortgage. They love the personal touch.
Matt, we're hearing a lot about social media, and it seems like we're hearing about it all the time.
Look, social media, Dave, is without a doubt the way of the future. Anyone not using social media will be left behind. And, you know, it's a great way to reach a huge audience instantly at little or no cost.
When you're talking about reaching a large audience, are you talking about new customers and new customer acquisition? Is that a way to get customers to at least start connecting with you and then they go to your website?
Absolutely. It's both.
So as we transition from a refinance market into a purchase market, what are some things mortgage companies need to keep in mind with regard to PR and marketing?
For me, David, the bottom line is there is going to be less business out there. The companies who have positioned themselves as forward-thinking and on the cutting edge of technology are going to thrive. In today's environment, a solid business plan must include social media. The key here, David, is reaching as wide an audience as possible. You know, your audience knows very well traditional advertising, traditional marketing. This is just another arrow in the quiver. It's another way to reach more of the general public.
Tell us about the public and community involvement issues you get your clients to engage. I think that's an interesting concept.
Look, these are some really exciting things here. Well, you know, it's no secret that the financial industry isn't held in the highest regard by the general population. In fact, Americans have a more negative view of financial companies, especially those involved in the mortgage industry. So we design programs to enhance our clients' reputations in the communities they serve.
So, Matt, what are some types of things that mortgage companies can do in their communities to change that image?
First one is, you know, it's really not hard to set aside a couple thousand dollars each month and make a mortgage grant to a family that's going through a crisis. This really serves the community. It helps with reputational issues, and we can also secure the appropriate press coverage of these efforts. Another thing is financial literacy. We work with companies to go into the schools and to go into these different clubs and organizations teach financial literacy, teach somebody how to balance a checkbook, teach somebody what a mortgage is. This goes towards these companies' CRA, Community Reinvestment Act credit, and it also creates a lot of customers.
Yeah, no question about it. Matt, any final thoughts?
A couple of final thoughts I'd say are gather email addresses of your customers. You want to stay in communication with them, and you also must tell them thank you. The average mortgage is, what, 6 or 7 years, so they will be back.
Yeah, that's so true.
If you was talking to a banker the other day, and he told me that a guy deposited $600,000 into some sort of investment account. This was his entire life savings. The reason that he did that is because he had that $600 in a competing bank's account, an account at a competing bank, and for 3 years, the bank never one time called him, never said thank you, never had any communication with him. And he said, you know, if somebody had simply sent me an email, had simply sent me a card saying, you know, a 25-cent card saying thank you for your money, thank you for your business, he said we wouldn't be having this conversation. So a small thank you goes a long way.
That is amazing. Matt, thank you so much for your time. Great perspective. How can people reach you?
David, it's been a pleasure. These are so much fun for me. We're on the internet at ascendpublicstrategies.com. Our office number is 404-410-3545.
Excellent. And your email?
Yeah, matt@ascendpublicstrategies.com.
And that's Matt, M-A-T-T, double T there, at ascendpublicstrategies, plural, .com. Thanks so much for taking time out of your busy day to be with us. Appreciate it. And wish you all the success. Folks, if you want to get a hold of Matt, be sure to email him or call him. We look forward to having you back, Matt, as we have more discussions about PR and the importance of it. Thank you, Matt.
Thanks so much, Dave. It was a lot of fun.
Well, thank you, Dave and Matt. And I think before the piece there, I said that Matt was at the MBA. And to clarify, Matt is Ascend Public Strategies, and that is the organization that is used by the Mortgage Bankers Association. So that's where the connection came in. Thank you all. I thought that was some great information. Andy, are you still there? I just want to touch on a couple of things.
Yes.
We have just a few minutes left in the program. I think just before that piece, we were segueing into the health check product. So I wanted to talk a little bit about this. Last week, a couple weeks, I've actually mentioned having a compliance checklist, and I got quite a few emails from folks saying, hey, Alice, send me a copy of the checklist. And I wanted to clarify for right? Well, it is a checklist, and I am happy to share it with folks. We do offer it, though, as a subscription-based service. So I know I sent you the link on it to be able to try and check it out a little bit. We've held several demos this week. So the compliance health check, for those of you who are interested in a compliance checklist, we've taken every regulation, and we actually also group them together in terms of how your operation works. This is a checklist that was built over my 30 years of operations, as well as almost 20 years of doing consulting within mortgage lenders, brokers, community banks, credit unions, large banks. You know, we've been in all these shops, and a lot of people like a checklist. And there's compliance that goes all the way back, right, for many, many years, and we have all the new stuff. And it's constantly changing. So we developed a checklist based on this experience, and it's a checklist that you can use in your operation. You ask yourself a series of questions. It's a web-based tool. It's used at the corporate level. So that's another distinct feature about our product. You're using it at the corporate level within your compliance department. And think of it as support for your compliance team, where they can walk through, have I thought of everything related to RESPA, related to truth in lending, add application, during processing. It really is a comprehensive checklist.
Well, so Alice, how is this health check something that I – say I'm a mortgage bank, president of a mortgage bank, which I used to be, and I'm glad to be helping mortgage banks today. And how is that? Where do I find the ROI in the work that you do to help me with your health checklist?
Okay, so if you think right now, your compliance folks have to look a lot of things up, especially if you have an individual who has to do this on their own, and they're interpreting things on their own, and they're working with, you know, they're doing a lot of constant research to identify what is it exactly I'm supposed to do with this regulation. And then now I have to track that are we doing this? Did we get this done? The checklist helps them go in, and this is something they use themselves. This is not something you up front give an auditor. It's not loan level, so it's not interrupting your loan flow at all. And as the web-based tool, it serves as marking something off the list. I don't have to go back to that. We've validated this truth in lending process. They are going out in 3 days, you know, just as a simple example, and I'm checking that off the list. So it's saving them time in being able to manage checking things off the list from a corporate standpoint. I have this policy done. I have this procedure in place, and it meets these 15 requirements done. And then when requirements change, we're sending them an email to say, hey, you got to go back to the checklist because this new regulation went into effect this month. So we're making your compliance team, helping your compliance team be much more efficient and not having to spend hours and hours tracking things down. We help them with that.
I see. And because you have the resource that you have and the experience that you have, every company needs to have a compliance officer, but the compliance officer may not have the tools or the resources, and they're working with trying to deploy compliance throughout the organization and don't have time to read every single legislative update that comes out two or three times a day or a week that your team is able to read. So they go, you're that resource behind the compliance officer that helps the compliance officer do their job effectively and well. Is that right?
Yeah, so I had one of my customers say, well, when in the refi times and when the Dodd-Frank Act items all first came out, we panicked and hired 3 people for the compliance department. Well, I need this. My margins are a problem right now. I need to cut overhead.
Yeah.
How do I make my compliance department more efficient? Well, that's easy. We help support them through consulting, through this checklist. Because when you're out there alone, you're not sure, how far do I have to go? And there are lots of nuances in the regulations. So to have a written policy is one thing, but to be able to say, I've addressed these issues operationally and they're working is another. I had one of my customers also think of, you know, normally I don't like to show a checklist to a regulator, but as you mentioned earlier, you know, you have to prove how you made a decision. They were looking at this checklist going, this is phenomenal, because now I can show a regulator I've taken the time, I've gone through every regulation, and I've marked off that I've put systems in place to be able to comply with each one of these. And I'm not afraid to show them a no, you know, because they're all yes-no questions. And when you answer no to a question, it describes your risks. It shows you the operational risks as well as the financial, as well as the regulatory. And a lot of folks like this, because sometimes it's hard to get that message to the board on, you know, it's not only a regulatory issue, but it's impacting my forecasts. It's also impacting my operation efficiency. So it gives a lot of messages to board level as well as to the auditors.
Well, in looking at your website, there's this alphabet soup of things that you guys check, ECOA, TILA, FACTA, HMDA,
right.
I mean, do not call, all this stuff. So if people want to learn more about this, what's the best way for them to get more information?
Well, you can send an email to alice.alvey@indicom.net. I'd be happy to start with that. We also have folks on staff who can make sure that you learn about the product quickly and get set up right away. We will keep this updated so that you have all the Dodd-Frank Act compliance ready in December so you can start running through your checklist before the regulations go into effect and know exactly what you've already accomplished and what you still need to accomplish. So we're really looking forward to the updates that we'll be able to offer people. So that's alice.alvey, A-L-V-E-Y, @indicom.net.
Well, and let me do just a real quick shameless plug for you, Alice. Having worked with you now for, I don't know, 5 years or whatever it is, Alice is a walking encyclopedia of compliance information, and also it's always being updated and refreshed because she's always reading these insane regulations that come out that's just a little bit of fine print that's really hard to understand. So Alice knows more about this than probably anybody in the country. She's a master CMB. She's worked with a campus MBA and is a nationally known speaker on this topic. So I actually don't know anybody better at this than you, Alice. And so people need to take advantage of your service.
Well, thanks very much, Andy. And same for you. I'm glad we got a chance to tell people about the tech and the ROI. So that's about all the time we have for today, folks. Have a great day, and we look forward to having Dave and Joe and the whole gang back next week. Take care.
This has been Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.